It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. One of the major issues of this year's gubernatorial race is sure to be job growth. The good news for the Commonwealth is that it has seen an increase in job growth and a decrease in the unemployment rate. However, a recent report by the Keystone Research Center indicates Pennsylvania falls below other states when it comes to job growth. Joining us to discuss the report's finding is Stephen Hertzenberg, Executive Director of the Keystone Research Center. Good to have you with us, Steve.
Great to be here, Paul.
Before we get into the study, I wanted to look at some of the very relevant concerns you raised in your op-ed titled, What Kind of Pittsburgh Do You Want?, which was in the Post-Gazette over Labor Day weekend. Who is Pittsburgh's prosperity leaving out?
It's leaving out a lot of people. In fact, most of Pittsburgh's and Pennsylvania's and the United States' prosperity is flowing to the very top in the last several years. Virtually all of the income growth since 2009 in the U.S. is flowing to the very top. But clearly, in Pittsburgh per se, there's maybe a quarter of the working population that doesn't make enough to support their family without public assistance, you know, even though in many of those cases they're working full time. So there's clearly a chunk of folks at the low end of the service sector mostly that are being completely left out of Pittsburgh's rebound.
So that would be the two-tier economy that you refer to, basically what comes down to haves and have-nots.
It is. I mean, again, it's sort of almost a three-tier because, again, there's this tiny slice at the top that's doing so well and a big slice.
Some would say the 1%.
The 1%. And then a big chunk of the 99% more in the last decade, you know, aren't even the college educated aren't doing better anymore. But then there is it's basically the bottom quarter of the labor market hasn't seen a raise when you look at the wage figures since the late 1970s. And so you're talking about, the lower part of the wage ladder in the healthcare sector, for example, in retail, you know, a lot of the service sector jobs that actually can't go to Mexico because their customers are here and so the jobs are going to stay here. But we've chosen, as a matter of public policy, local, state, national public policy, to manage our economy in a way that those folks are not sharing in the benefits of growth at all. You mentioned the op-ed. I'm tempted to go on a little bit and sort of talk a little bit about what the context that that op-ed put Pittsburgh's inequality in.
And explain the problem,
yeah.
I guess,
yeah.
So people understand it. The problem of wealth inequality.
Yeah. So what the op-ed did is it basically summarized very, very briefly a new book that's gained a great deal of positive attention across the globe, Capital in the 21st Century, by a French economist called Thomas Piketty. And what Piketty does, which really was educational for me, and I study these things all the time, but he's put together the best data set across time and space regarding income and wealth inequality for multiple countries, you know, starting with France right after the French Revolutions when they started collecting their data, but then a lot of other European countries and the U.S. And what he does, which was sort of news to me, he points out how unusual the period 1945 to 1980 was. He makes clear that in the grand scheme, in terms of wealth inequality, that was the only period where the wealth created during people's lives, so the wealth that's not inherited, was like 60% of the total. In virtually every other period, you're talking about inherited wealth being 80% or more of the total wealth.
And that was America at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, right?
Absolutely. 80% – absolutely. It was a society in which the have-lots, their kids, had a huge advantage at the starting gate 100 years ago. And again, two world wars destroyed a lot of inherited wealth. And then 1945 to 1980 was a period of very rapid growth.
So you saw equality between inherited those who benefited from inherited wealth and those who created their wealth through opportunities in the post-war economy.
Exactly. So you think that's right. There's two buckets of wealth. One's inherited, one's not. And because the inherited one shrank a lot and then the not inherited one grew a lot, you had this situation where for a couple of generations, it really was factually closer to true that where you ended up was a function of your own efforts. So the American dream of widespread mobility was really honored in that period. And what Piketty is very worried about is that the growth of inequality in wealth as well as income since 1980 is getting us back to really what he shows is the historical norm among the now advanced countries.
And if
which is where most of the wealth is inherited, and really folks who start out wealthy, they just have enormous advantages. So he's worried that that's going to undermine two core values, which is the idea of widespread mobility. He's also very worried about democracy because he's worried about that kind of wealth inequality.
It would undermine democracy much in the way that it perhaps nearly did in during the Depression when people were looking at seriously at socialism and communism. And
right, and it makes our democracy responsive to the very wealthiest and therefore unresponsive to the broad middle class and the public good. So again, what people don't tend to step back to that broader global picture when they're thinking about Pittsburgh battles about what should service sector workers be paid. So our goal in that op-ed was to help people step back and see that are there some immediate stakes in terms of people being able to pay their rent, put food on the table, support their family? Absolutely they are. Those are tangible reasons that people need to be paid $15 an hour or more, enough to support their family. But people also need to see that there's something larger at stake for all of us. Unless we find a way locally, state level, national level, unless we find a way to share the benefits of economic growth again, to allow families at every station in the economy to save at least some money, then we're getting back to really a feudal kind of system where it's inequality at the starting gate means inequality at the finishing gate. And I don't think any of us want that kind of place. It's very much a shared value that people should be able to work hard, play by the rules, and do well. And so that's, you know, it's that long-term challenge that is why when it comes to the minimum wage or when it comes to what service workers are paid, including in the healthcare sector, why we think that Pittsburgh needs to step up and show the kind of leadership that we need to get back to an economy where mobility and responsive democracy are strong again.
And I want to get into what some of those policies would look like going forward. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Keystone Research Director Stephen Herzenberg. And we'll also get back to the Center's report on job growth in Pennsylvania. I do want to address a couple of questions from folks on Twitter. Nettie P. tweets, what are your thoughts on the soon-to-retire workers and lack of workers to fill those jobs? She's talking about plumbers and electricians, among others.
Well, she's absolutely right that we've got a very aging construction workforce. There hasn't been a lot of investment in apprenticeship in the last few years because construction demand was so down. So that's kind of an opportunity, actually, now that construction is recovering, including in Pennsylvania and in the Pittsburgh region. So, that again, that's one place where, as in other sectors, it matters what the policies are in terms of how workers are treated in construction. So we think we need state policies that support decent wages in construction. We need policies that support investment in training workers so you have high-skill, high-wage construction workers. You know, that's sort of a microcosm of the kinds of policies that you need to put in place in sector after sector.
Also a comment from David on Twitter, affordable housing is Pittsburgh's greatest challenge and opportunity for innovation. I wanted to talk about policies to address the problems that you've outlined. What do we need to do?
Well, again, I'm going to transition back to the report that we released over –
Right. This is the Keystone Research Center's report on job growth in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and it's an annual Labor Day assessment of the economy from the perspective of working families. It's called The State of Working Pennsylvania. And really what we did in that report this year is point to the wrong policies that have been in place at the state and very much the federal level since 2010. Because in 2010, the recovery was just beginning. It was a little stronger in Pennsylvania than nationally. We were a top 10 state for job growth in 2010. And then what happened is we had an election which led to policies of basically cutting spending, what economists call austerity economics. So there was an experiment which actually we've tried and it failed on many other occasions in history and other places.
Well, it doesn't seem to be working so well in Europe right now.
It's not working at all in Europe. It didn't work at all when Herbert Hoover was president in the United States. And it's not worked in the good old USA or in Pennsylvania since 2010. So what happened is we tried to cut our way to prosperity. We took demand out of an economy where businesses weren't investing enough, where consumers weren't able to buy enough. And so the demand of last resort is government spending. You know, if you're smart about it, you can invest in education. You can invest in infrastructure. You can make yourself stronger long term, more productive long term. But we did the opposite of that. We cut spending at the federal level. We cut spending at the state level in Pennsylvania in particular. We cut, starting in 2011, roughly $1 billion from education spending. And so that translated into 27,000 lost jobs in public schools across Pennsylvania. Those folks in turn didn't buy at the local grocers or other local businesses as much. So in sort of four different places in the last 3 years, Pennsylvania's done the wrong thing. Education funding cuts, which means job loss and demand out of our economy. The second thing is only just recently are we getting around to accepting billions of dollars from the federal government to expand Medicaid, health care for low-income folks. We could have had another 35,000 jobs estimated by RAND in this year if we had already accepted Medicaid expansion. We cut
on – the delay by Governor Corbett, and what led to his very different form of expanded health care is part of the problem.
That's right. I mean, there are a bunch of other states, including some with Republican governors, that have already accepted the Medicaid money. I think
all of the surrounding states have.
Certainly Ohio has, right. Which where Governor Kasich is a Republican.
Well, I want to get into this. Yeah. Looking at what happens going forward, what role will technology industries have for job growth in Pennsylvania? For example, in Pittsburgh, we now have a Google office opening.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that come in? Does that lift all boats?
It doesn't lift all boats. I mean, technology sectors, innovation are absolutely critical in advanced manufacturing. All the startups spinning out of CMU, as well as tech companies, software companies. So we absolutely need to invest as a state and a country in those industries. We don't invest as nearly as much as, let's say, Germany does in that kind of innovation. But because those sectors have a small fraction of the jobs, you have to also have policies like lifting service sector wages if you want to create an economy which lifts all boats. So, I mean, broadly speaking, those are kind of the two things you've got to do. You've got to invest in the future and innovation, and you've also got to worry about how the benefits of growth are distributed.
Do you expect job growth to increase within the next few years? Should Pennsylvania residents be hopeful for more employment opportunities?
Again, we can't get much worse. As you pointed out in passing, we're 47th in job growth in Pennsylvania since 2010. And again, other measures of the health of our economy that we looked at in our Labor Day report, including underemployment, for example, don't look good. So certainly, I think if you reverse the misguided cut your way to prosperity policies of the last few years, then you can look at the next few years being more of a return to 2010, which was a more robust recovery in Pennsylvania. Once we get that growth going, then we can worry about the longer-term issue of how you invest in innovative companies, innovative sectors, and then how long-term you begin to make progress on the growth of inequality that we've seen over 30 years.
We're down to less than a minute, but you mentioned policymakers and outside factors as reasons for the economic state of Pennsylvania. What are some of the outside factors that the residents of this state can change in order to help the state economy?
Well, again, one of the key themes of our report is policy choices. So we put out a report to inform voters and to inform the public and using, in many cases, media. So part of it is we hope that the educated lay people out there, that's your audience especially, will read the State of Working Pennsylvania on the webpage of the Keystone Research Center. And if they agree with us, then they need to make their voice heard. That's how we'll get policies that strengthen our economy and promote greater equity.
And we can put a link to that on our website at WESA.FM in 5 seconds. Which Pennsylvania city has the highest job growth?
You know, that's a great question, I don't know the answer to it.
All right.
Is it Pittsburgh?
I don't know. I'm hoping it is.
I know Pittsburgh's been, again, doing better than most places in Pennsylvania and nationally over the last few years.
Steve Herzenberg with the Keystone Research Center. We have to run. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening. So long for now.